Something incredible in the world of aviation and geography is happening next year in 2027. Throughout all of our lives, we've generally believed that the world is about as well connected through air travel as it could already possibly be, and that everywhere is just a short flight away from anywhere else. And yet, one of the world's largest airline markets has never been directly connected to two of the world's other largest markets. To date, there has still never been a regularly scheduled non-stop commercial airline flight between the heavily populated east coast of Australia and Europe or the US East Coast, which means that residents of major Australian cities like Sydney and Melbourne, both home to more than 5 million people, have never been able to take a direct flight to places like New York City or London. The major reason why is simply due to sheer geographic distance. If you took Australia and placed it on the exact opposite side of the world, you'd see that it'd be placed in the North Atlantic, right in between Europe and North America. Thus, Europe and the US East Coast are about as geographically far away from the Australian East Coast as you can possibly get, since they're basically on the opposite ends of the planet from each other. And to date, our technology has not been good enough to enable a commercial airliner fully loaded with passengers and cargo to make that entire long journey that far non-stop. Establishing a non-stop direct commercial flight between Sydney and London, two massive, culturally similar English-speaking cities on nearly opposite ends of the Earth, has long been considered to be one of the holy grails of the aviation community for nearly a century now, and one of the final unbroken frontiers left on the Earth for global aviation to surpass. As long ago as 1989, commercial airliners like the Boeing 747 have technically managed to make the entire journey between them nonstop, but they were always test flights filled with special fuel and were always virtually empty without any passengers or cargo to save on weight to extend their range. The trick was always to find an aircraft that could actually make the entire journey with a full payload of passengers and cargo on board, which until today has remained elusive and just out of reach technologically. But not for much longer, because next year in 2027, Qantas Airlines is finally expected to introduce direct non-stop service between the two cities for the first time in history. It will be the culmination of the past decade of relentless technological advancement and engineering by multiple companies, at the end of nearly a century of air travel between the two cities that has always involved at least one stopover point along the way. It is poised to completely revolutionize travel between the largest cities of the UK and Australia, and upon its opening, it will immediately become the longest non-stop flight in the world, lasting for roughly 22 straight hours. That long of a flight might sound like a nightmare to you, but when you consider that it'll enable a human being to travel from one side of the world to the other in less than a day, and when you consider how brutal the journey between the UK and Australia has been historically, that 22-hour journey that'll start next year will seem like nothing other than a technological miracle. In the long era before the advent of air travel, the journey between the UK and Australia was a slow and grinding one. In the late 18th century, when Britain began colonizing and settling Australia, sailing between them took between 8 and 12 months each way. By the time of the 1850s and 1870s, with the advent of fast clipper ships, the journey time was dramatically reduced down to between 70 and 120 days. And with the later advent of steamships and the opening of the Suez Canal between the 1870s and the First World War, the journey time was cut down even further to between 30 and 50 days. It wasn't until after the end of the First World War that travel between the UK and Australia could actually be accomplished in less than a month. And it came with the first ever flight between them in 1919. Known at the time as the Great Air Race, six contestants took part and the victors were a pair of Australian brothers, Ross and Keith Smith, who were accompanied by two mechanics. Together, the four men flew a modified Vickers Vimy bomber that had been developed during the First World War across an odyssey of the Eurasian continent towards Australia that covered roughly 14,350 kilometers. Starting in London, the team planned for at least 14 stops along the way to Australia for rest, refueling, and maintenance. After departing London, the plan called for stops in Lyon, Rome, Cairo, Damascus, Basra, Karachi, Delhi, Calcutta, Akyab or modern-day Sitwen, Myanmar, Rangoon or modern-day Yangon, Singora or modern-day Songkhla in Thailand, Singapore, Batavia or modern-day Jakarta, and Surabaya before the final arrival at Darwin in northern Australia. However, along the way, the team had to make 9 additional unscheduled stops due to unanticipated weather, fuel, maintenance, and operational needs that cropped up, which brought the total number of stops they had to make along the way to an insane 23. All in all, it still took this team in 1919 a whopping 27 days and 20 hours to fly between London and Darwin, with a total amount of flying time in the air of 136 hours along the way. But in doing so, the barrier had been broken. They proved that flights between Britain and Australia were possible, and that for the first time in history, travel between the two landmasses on opposite sides of the planet was able to be accomplished in less than a month's time. And it would only keep on improving from there. And the dream of eventually establishing a continuous non-stop flight between the two continents was born. 16 years later, in 1935, Australian-based Qantas Airlines and UK-based Imperial Airways, one of the predecessors to British Airways, jointly opened the first-ever commercial air route between the UK and Australia, running between London and Brisbane. But it was still a brutal ordeal when compared with air travel between them today. Flights only departed once per week, and the total travel time took 12 and a half days to complete. When departing from London, the flight would have to stop in Paris, where passengers would take an overnight train to Brindisi, where they would then resume the flight portion with further stops in Athens, an overnight stop in Alexandria, another stop in Gaza, an overnight stop in Baghdad, further stops in Basra, Kuwait City, Bahrain, and another overnight stop in Sharjah, more stops in Gwadar and Karachi with another overnight stop in Jodhpur, even more stops in Delhi, Kanpur, Allahabad, and another overnight stop in Calcutta, followed by yet more stops in Akyab, Rangoon, and another overnight stop in Bangkok, followed by a stop in Alor Star, and another overnight stop in Singapore, with more stops in Jakarta, Surabaya, and an overnight stop in Rambang, followed by a stop in Koh Phang, and another overnight stop in Darwin, with one final overnight stop in Longreach before finally arriving into Brisbane 12 and a half days later after having left from London, with no less than 28 scheduled stops along the way. Multiple different aircraft were used for the different sections of the route, and only around 10 passengers could be carried along it as the flights departed once per week. And for the privilege of getting between the UK and Australia in just 12 and a half days in 1935, the price for a ticket on board cost £195, which in modern 2026 value is more than $50,000. Nonetheless, the leap from the 1919 race to the 1935 scheduled service between the UK and Australia was a remarkable achievement. The trip time was cut down by more than half in just 16 years, and it went from a daring expedition only undertaken by pioneering aviators to something that a wealthy passenger could reasonably actually buy a ticket for. And as the technology advanced further, both the price and time would continue climbing down more and more as well. By 1938, Imperial Airways opened up the first ever London to Sydney service that primarily relied upon new short empire flying boats, which were novel because they didn't need paved runways or infrastructure to land at. They just needed rivers or harbors, which in the 1930s were much more abundant across Eurasia than paved runways were. The international terminal in Sydney back then wasn't even really an airport at all in the modern sense, but a flying boat base in Rose Bay on Sydney Harbour where passengers boarded from docks and slipways as if it were a maritime voyage instead. The short empire flying boats were able to cut the number of stops between the UK and Australia in half, down from 28 to only 14, while they also cut the total travel time down from 12 and a half days to 9.5 days instead. As you'd expect, the Second World War significantly disrupted the travel market between Australia and the UK for all kinds of reasons. But by the summer of 1943, Qantas managed to figure out an insane workaround that is important for the lore behind Qantas's modern route today. In order to re-establish the lost aerial connection to the UK, Qantas cobbled together 5 consolidated PBY Catalina aircraft that they were able to use to make the first non-stop commercial flights across the entire Indian Ocean. Beginning in Perth, Western Australia, the Catalinas were flown to their maximum intensity for more than 3,500 nautical miles clear across the Indian Ocean to an RAF base at Kogala on the southern shore of Sri Lanka, which at the time represented the longest non-stop commercial air route ever devised. navigated entirely without the aid of radio, the crews on board were forced to rely entirely on just basic navigation tools like a compass and the stars. With departure strategically timed so that the flight would cross through Japanese-occupied territory under the cover of darkness, and with the flight times lasting between 27 and 33 hours, the crew and passengers on board would witness two sunrises along the way. And it remains the longest airtime for a commercial flight in aviation history still to this day. Once they arrived in Sri Lanka, passengers would be transported by ground to Karachi, where they would continue on along their way to London. This service became known as the Double Sunrise Service, and in a nod to their own history of pushing aviation's boundaries, it is what Qantas has named their current direct Sydney to London service after, Project Sunrise. By 1944, Qantas began calling the revived route between Sydney and London the Kangaroo Route for the first time. Named after all of the stops, or hops, that their aircraft had to take along the way between them that were reminiscent of a kangaroo's hops. After the war ended, the flights clear across the Indian Ocean were ended, and by 1947, Qantas took over the complete operation of the entire route between Australia and the UK for the first time. Utilizing new Lockheed Constellation aircraft, Qantas's restored and fully operated post-war service between Sydney and London could carry 29 passengers between the two cities in as little as 4 days. Less than half the time it took to do so pre-war, while the ticket prices had also come down to the equivalent of just $26,000 in today's money, also about half of the price that it was pre-war. And by this point, the Constellation aircraft flying the Kangaroo route only required 6 stops along the way in Darwin, Singapore, Calcutta, Karachi, Cairo, and Tripoli, with Singapore and Cairo serving as the only remaining overnight stops. Over the next decade, going into the 1950s, several competitors to Qantas opened up their own Sydney to London routes as well. Qantas was flying 4 flights a week. BOAC, one of the other predecessors of British Airways, was also flying 4 a week, while Air India and KLM were each flying 1 a week. By the end of the Super Constellation piston-driven era in early 1959, Qantas had managed to get the total travel time along the route between Sydney and London down to just about 2 days and 16 hours, utilizing about the same number of stops as they had been in the immediate post-war era. It was also about the absolute limit that piston-driven aircraft could reasonably reach. But 1959 was an important year for the Kangaroo route, because it's also the year that Qantas first adopted jet aircraft for the route. Qantas was the first customer outside of the United States to receive the Boeing 707 jetliner, and they immediately put them on the Kangaroo route. And virtually overnight, as the 707 jets replaced the piston-driven Constellations, the total travel time between Sydney and London was slashed by roughly 40%, or by about 25 hours, through just a single technological leap. The introduction of the 707 enabled air travel between the two cities to be accomplished in as little as 38 hours, but it still involved roughly the same number of intermediate stops along the way as during the previous piston-driven era. The primary innovation of the 707 for the Kangaroo route wasn't the reduction in stops, but the sheer faster speed that it could actually fly along them at. 5 or 6 stops along the way between the cities was still required, but for the first time, the entire journey could be accomplished in only about a day and a half. In order to get rid of the number of stops and save even more time along the journey, jetliner technology would need to advance further and range would need to be improved. And both would eventually come with Boeing's release of the 747 in the early 1970s. In 1971, Qantas introduced the 747 to the Kangaroo route in another technological leap forward. When compared to the 707, the 747 could carry more than double the number of passengers and had a maximum range of about 7,260 nautical miles, compared to the 5,000 nautical miles of the 707. As a result, the 747 could carry many times more passengers along the Kangaroo route and required significantly fewer stops along the way. So, upon their introduction in 1971, Qantas's 747s could fly between Sydney and London with only 2 stops along the way in Singapore and Bahrain, down from the 6 stops that were still required with the older 707 jets. And as a result, the travel time between Sydney and London fell further by several hours, while the price steadily came down for passengers as well. For Australia, the 747 was the aircraft that finally transformed Europe from an exclusive, elite destination into a realistic holiday option for the middle class. And as further improvements to the 747's range were made by Boeing with later additions, Qantas continued improving the Australia-Europe connection even more as well. In 1974, Qantas was able to use the 747-200 model to introduce the first ever one-stop service between the Australian and European continents. But it wasn't between Sydney and London. It was between Perth and London, with a stopover in Bombay instead. Because geographically, Perth is about one-sixth closer to the UK than Sydney is. The route between Sydney and London using 747 still involved double stopovers in Singapore and Bahrain all the way until 1988, when the new Boeing 747-300 finally enabled Qantas to introduce the first ever one-stop service between the two cities, eliminating the stopover in Bahrain and retaining Singapore as the only stopover along the Kangaroo route still remaining. With this innovation, Qantas managed to get the total travel time between Sydney and London down to only around 25 or 26 hours, or just a little over a full day. And this is generally where the technology has remained at ever since. In 1989, Qantas did manage to set a headline-grabbing record with a Boeing 747-400 that they were able to fly non-stop directly between London and Sydney in just a little over 20 hours. The first time that anyone had managed to fly a commercial airliner between them directly without ever stopping. However, that flight utilized special fuel, and it didn't contain any passengers or cargo on board to save on weight and to extend range. Fully loaded, the 747 still couldn't ever make the journey nonstop, and as it would turn out, Qantas's 1989 test flight would be the first and last direct flight made between London and Sydney for the next three decades. For the most part, for more than two decades since 2004, the longest non-stop commercial flight in the world has been offered by Singapore Airlines between Singapore and the New York City area. At first, between Singapore Changi Airport and Newark, and since 2020, between Singapore Changi and New York JFK. The route covers a distance of 15,344 kilometers and takes roughly 18 and a half hours to complete. The distance between Sydney and London is much greater than this, at just over 17,000 kilometers. And for the entirety of the 21st century so far, no direct route between them has yet come into existence. Traditionally, in modern times, there have been four primary flight routes to take between them. Qantas, along with rivals like Singapore Airlines and British Airways, have offered the fastest and most direct route with a one-stop flight between them and Singapore. Generally, upon arrival in Singapore, passengers on the flight will deboard while the plane is serviced, cleaned, and refueled before they reboard and take back off again. They generally spend around 2 hours down on the ground in Singapore, in addition to the time it takes to land and take back off again. While the entire journey gate-to-gate between Sydney and London generally takes a bit more than 25 hours on average to complete. Other routes operated by Persian Gulf Airlines like Emirates, Etihad, and Qatar Airways offer similar one-stop service routing through Dubai, Abu Dhabi, or Doha. But these are slightly longer than the route through Singapore and are also prone to wartime disruptions due to broader Middle Eastern instability issues. There are much longer but sometimes cheaper routes through Asian connection points like Tokyo, Hong Kong, Istanbul, Delhi, or Bangkok, and since 2018, there's been Qantas's non-stop service between Perth and London to consider as well. Because Perth is about one-sixth closer to London than Sydney, in the 1970s, Qantas was able to introduce one-stop service between Perth and London more than a decade before it was able to offer the same service between Sydney and London. And in the 2010s and 20s, Qantas has similarly been able to offer non-stop service between Perth and London first as well. Lasting for around 18 hours, the non-stop Perth to London flight is currently the third longest-lasting non-stop flight in the world. While it also offers travelers from Sydney the ability to have another one-stop flight option to London with a stopover point in Perth along the way. It was also, notably, the first ever direct non-stop commercial flight established between the European and Australian continents, which itself was already a huge accomplishment. But there was still no direct non-stop flight between Sydney and London. And in 2017, just before the non-stop Perth to London service was started, Qantas decided to begin setting the pieces in motion to finally change that. In August of 2017, Qantas unveiled Project Sunrise, their ambition to finally achieve a non-stop direct commercial flight between Sydney and London. The Sunrise part of the name was both a nod to Qantas's history of pushing the boundaries of long-haul air travel with the double sunrise flights of the 1940s between Perth and Sri Lanka, and to the fact that passengers flying directly between Sydney and London would also experience two sunrises while on board. Qantas challenged both Boeing and Airbus to engineer an aircraft that could actually handle flying the route with a full payload of cargo and passengers on board, and both companies quickly got to work with their designs. 2 years later, in 2019, both companies submitted their designs to Qantas, but then in 2020, the COVID-19 pandemic placed a sharp halt on the planning for the project. For the next 2 years, Project Sunrise was effectively frozen and put on hold until the summer of 2022, when Qantas ultimately decided to go with the Airbus proposal for a modified version of the Airbus A350 that they called the A350-1000ULR for ultra-long range. When compared with a conventional A350-1000, the A350-1000ULR is designed to have an extended range of 1,000 extra nautical miles. This was accomplished by adding an additional fuel tank on board that can carry an extra 20,000 liters of fuel, added structural reinforcements to the airframe that can support the added takeoff weight, and by reducing the number of passengers on board from more than 300 to only 238 to save on payload weight. With these modifications in place, the A350-1000ULR will be capable of flying more than 17,000 kilometers nonstop for at least 22 hours. Or in other words, just long enough to be able to fly nonstop between Sydney and London. Qantas placed an order for 12 of these A350-1000ULRs from Airbus to service the London to Sydney route, with the expectation that service would begin in late 2025. Unfortunately, during the aircraft certification process in 2024, regulatory concerns arose around the design of the aircraft's extra fuel tank, and Airbus was compelled to completely redesign it, which delayed the project again. The first deliveries of the new aircraft were then expected to be made to Qantas in late 2026, but then in early 2026, Qantas announced that due to unexpected supply chain disruptions that were affecting Airbus's production, the first aircraft delivery wouldn't actually be made until early 2027. So currently, the A350-1000ULR certification and testing flights are taking place in Europe, while Qantas and Airbus anticipate that the first deliveries of the aircraft will be made during the first half of 2027, with Project Sunrise's nonstop service between Sydney and London set to finally commence in the second half of 2027. A full decade after Qantas first announced the start of the project in 2017. And once it's in service, after finally eliminating the final stop along the Kangaroo route in Singapore that's been around since the 1980s, it'll reduce the total travel time between London and Sydney to just 22 hours, shedding between 3 and 4 hours from the fastest journey that's available today. And for the first time in history, offering commercial air travel between the two cities on nearly opposite ends of the earth in less than a single day. And it'll also blow the Singapore to New York flight out of the water for the longest nonstop flight in the world, beating that route's record that has been held for more than 2 decades since 2004. Now, sitting on a flight for 22 straight hours might sound like a nightmare to a lot of people still, but it's much better than the travel options of the past were, while Qantas is also doing everything that it can to make the flight as unpainful as possible. The 238 seats on board will be divided into 6 very spacious first-class suites up front that resemble a studio apartment, followed by 52 business-class suites that'll feature closable doors for privacy, 40 premium economy seats, and then 140 economy seats that'll offer a generous 33-inch seat pitch, more than most economy seats anywhere else do. Qantas is also adding what it calls a well-being zone on board the flights as well, which will give passengers a dedicated space to stand, stretch, exercise, and move around while on board for 22 continuous hours. In addition to the route to London, Qantas is also planning on using the A350-1000ULR to launch a direct nonstop route between Sydney and New York City for the first time as well, which will be great for travelers between these cities who have traditionally had to lay over somewhere in between, like Dallas or Los Angeles first. But coming in at about 1,000 kilometers closer to Sydney than London is, the New York City flights will be a bit shorter and faster. In the future, Qantas might use the extended range of the A350-1000ULR to open up more direct routes to London and New York from other major Australian cities like Melbourne and Brisbane. But either way, once Project Sunrise begins with their nonstop flights between Sydney and London in 2027, one of the holy grails of commercial aviation will have finally been reached. Since the very first flight was made between London and Sydney all the way back in 1919 that took nearly 28 entire days to accomplish, it's only taken a little more than a century of continuous innovation and progress to get that total travel time down to less than one day. And I think that that is nothing less than one of the most incredible achievements of the modern era. And it's something I believe that all of humanity should collectively take pride in. Meanwhile, in the United States, one of the most concerning things about living here, besides not yet having direct New York City to Sydney flights, is that there are pretty weak data privacy laws and a ton of personal data that gets put out into the public record, frequently by local, state, and federal governments themselves. It's always been like that here, and it wasn't really ever a huge problem before the advent of the internet. But these days, it means that people are able to turn a profit off of making it easier for other people to get your personal information, and they do. They're called people sites, and if you want to see for yourself, just search your name and address or phone number, and you'll probably come across a bunch of these sites that list at least some of your personal information. But you also have the power to change this. You have the legal right to request that your personal data is removed from each and every one of these sites. The biggest problem is that it takes forever to actually do that. They make it as hard as possible, and you have to do it individually over and over again for every single one of the endless sites that have it. But that's a problem that this video sponsor, Incogni, fixes. They'll do this entire process for you on your behalf. They constantly search through the internet for any of your personal data that's out there, and they'll go through the whole process of taking it all down, including handling any and all rejections. Letting Incogni handle all of this is not only great for your peace of mind, but it can also really help cut down on obnoxious spam calls and emails, since it's these very same services that sell your data in bulk. I've been an actual customer of Incogni for years now, so I know that it really works, and I found the cost to be very well worth it. And it'll be even more worth it for you, because Incogni is offering you 60% off of their annual plan when you click the button here on your screen right now, or when you go to incogni.com/reallifelore, or by following the link that's down below in the description, and use code REALLIFELORE. It's a great way to help support my channel and the journalism that I'm trying to do here as well. And as always, thank you so much for watching.